podcast. Folks, it is Go Week. This week, the Wheel of Time drops on Amazon Prime. When this is live, these three episodes will already be out, and I'm sure Facebook will be imploding, and the other social medias will be exploding. And we thought we'd talk about it, because I went somewhere this week and had some fun, and I took someone along with me, and that's my guest this week. That is Kayla. Say hello, Kayla.
Hello.
I honestly thought you would be like, hello, Kayla.
I thought about it. I did.
Nice, nice. So, yeah, where did we go this week, Kayla?
We took a little train down to London.
We did.
Yeah.
We got an invite somewhere. We had to dress up.
We did.
You're an Asher.
We looked damn good doing it.
Oh, fuck yeah, we look good. Yeah. We nailed it.
Yes, we did.
Oh, yeah. I was in, what was the name of the suit your dad suggested?
Oh, I don't even remember. I'd have to
Nauru? Is it? It's an Asian-inspired suit.
Yeah,
I look fucking shit on in it. And you went as an Asher woman.
I did.
And you fucking nailed it. Like, dragon necklace, sword earrings, like, makeup. Like, eye makeup was like, wow. So, yeah, we looked fit to it. And we dressed up that much, folks, because we went to the Wheel of Time world premiere. And it was a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun.
I had an amazing time. Yeah. One of us is so awesome that Amazon invited him to attend the world premiere, the blue carpet premiere.
Yes.
In London with all of the stars.
It was wild. I literally walked, within like 3 feet of Daniel Henney whilst he was being interviewed on the blue carpet. And I was like, that's Daniel Henney, we just walked past. And yeah. So we're going to dive into this. And because this episode comes out after the first three episodes have dropped, we are going to talk about things that we saw in the first two episodes. So if you haven't watched the first two episodes yet, please go watch them, because you're a lunatic for having not watched them yet. And then come back and listen to us discuss our favourite bits. But we're going to discuss a lot about the premiere event as well. We're obviously going to talk a little bit about the show. So, Kayla, what was your favourite bit of the first two episodes?
That would be Daniel Henney's ass. Or, according to Daniel Henney, Lanyel Henney.
Lanyel, yes.
Yes, Lanyel he would Henney. Like to be referred to as Lanyel.
Yes.
There is a fantastic scene in which him and Rosamund Pike share a bath, mm-hmm. and it's changed my life.
Yeah.
Absolutely has changed my life.
Like, I saw someone describe in a chat where folks were already talking about it, describe his ass like those cheek curves or something of that nature, those cheekbones, referring to his ass, are defined enough or strong enough to cut diamonds.
Ooh.
And I feel like that's an appropriate description.
Yeah, I was speechless at that point. I'm speechless now. It was an absolute pleasure. It was everything that you wanted it to be. You felt like there could have been sexual tension, but there just wasn't.
Mm-hmm. It was greatly done, yes.
It really was. And like, generally when you start talking about like men and women sharing baths in that way, it's really hard to get away with it not being sexual, especially when you have something that stellar
mm-hmm.
on a giant IMAX size screen.
Oh, yes. So folks, yeah, I feel like I can tell you now, we're at the BFI IMAX in Central London, Waterloo, and this IMAX screen is fucking enormous. Shame about the seats, if we're honest. The seats suck.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But the IMAX screen itself is absolutely incredible. And yeah, Daniel Henney's ass was probably, like 15 feet high on the screen or something like
easily.
That, you know? Like, in terms of, like, from top to bottom of the cheek itself. it was a mighty size on screen. So. And Daniel Henney said afterwards it was, like, one of the first scenes he filmed with Rosamund Pike.
He did. I think he talked about, you know, one of the first times that they filmed together and doing full frontal
mm-hmm.
in front of your castmate, and the unattractive angles of going up the steps and then coming back down the steps, and yeah. it was great.
And apparently Rosamund filmed it from her side and she loved it. So yeah.
Yes. Yeah. But you know, I think I'm hoping that it sets the tone for their whole relationship.
Yes, because it didn't feel sexual at all. Literally felt like two people, like, it's been a long day, let's have a fucking bath.
Yeah.
Lan's going to complain, it's not hot enough. Which was just hilarious. There was, like, humor in the moment as well. It felt very, just like, you know, it's a long day. It's like, it felt like they were having a pint after work sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know, it was great. It was very, very well done.
It really was. And, you know, I think what I appreciate and what we've kind of talked about in the, you know, 12 hours since this has all happened.
Jesus, yeah. We were still there this time last night.
We were. is how fascinating it's going to be having Amazon explain things without explaining things to people that haven't read the books, don't understand the relationship between an Aes Sedai and a warder.
Yeah.
Or, you know, we talked about the three oaths and any of that. So I think getting to see how that's going to play out so that the general populace can understand or try and pick up some of the more nuanced things like those relationships is really fascinating. And I think this is a great first example of how they're going to do that because, you know, it's just such a cool scene, really, you know, also Daniel Henney's ass, but it's such a good introduction to that relationship. And I really did appreciate it a lot.
And it could be warmer. I think the whole cinema was chuckling.
Yeah.
You know, he gets in, this like, it could be warmer. And Rosamund's like, well, I'm surprised he even had this much. And he's like, it could still be warmer. And she's like, you know, like waves the hand around a little bit. And then we have our water. And I was like, yes, it's just, it was chef kiss moment. Very nice.
It was. And it's an impressive bathtub as well.
This thing, like, they were like sat in it and it was to the shoulders of water, and it was like, it's not like they were sat on top of each other. No. It was like a hot tub size.
It was. And it looked like a wine cask or a whiskey cask. It was really cool. I would not mind having one of those.
Yeah.
Maybe something we should look into.
Yeah, that's we'll do a Two Rivers style hot tub. That's got to be a thing.
Yeah.
Someone out there who builds hot tubs, make a Two Rivers hot tub. You know, that's I love that idea already. Oh god. Right, so now we've talked about the ass scene.
We've waxed poetic about Lanyel Henny's ass.
Lanyel Henny, yes. Did I have a favorite moment in the first two episodes? And it's not because of, you know, yes, they killed it. So Perrin, if you've not watched this, because I'm now getting into actual spoilers.
Yeah, heavy spoiler here.
Yeah, this is like heavy spoiler here. So if you've not watched it, seriously, go off, come back. You know, you're like, what, I don't know, 7 minutes into the podcast or something like that. Like, come back, pick it back up and listen. But have you gone? Okay. But the scene where Perrin kills his wife, oh my fucking god. I gasped in the cinema.
You did?
Like, literally, like, physically moved in my seat in the process.
Yeah.
Because I thought she was going to die. This is mid-Trolloc attack. It's him and his wife, Layla, I think so,
yeah.
Yeah. In the forge, fighting off a couple of Trollocs. And I honestly thought she was going to be killed by a Trolloc, and that was it.
Yeah. I mean, she was pretty badass. She had that hammer.
Oh, yeah.
She was going for it.
Yeah, she was kicking ass. It was very impressive. I feel like she was handling herself better than Perrin as well.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Marcus was throwing himself around, you know, but I feel like she was handling it better.
Yeah.
It was impressive. But then when he turns around with the axe after he has brutally killed Trolloc, like, the blood, oh god, the gore, yes please, but, you know, wow, straight in there, like, halfway through the first episode, his Perrin literally hacking a Trolloc.
Yeah.
And then he turns around and basically slices his wife in two with an axe, like.
Yeah.
That whole foreshadowing of the hammer and the axe situation and his journey with violence, just, I put that on the level of foreshadowing with Robert Jordan's writing.
Yeah, you know, just absolutely.
How intricate that scene is. I was thinking about this last night. I'm so bummed that the Q&A afterwards, they didn't ask questions to the audience, because I would have literally probably asked a 5-minute question detailing that scene and the foreshadowing. And just been like, I just want to say that was amazing, you know? But
yeah,
that was, wow.
It was well done. The whole fight scene, I was really impressed with the fighting in general, but that one especially, it was so, like, nitty gritty and violent in a way that it would have to be, you know. It didn't feel like it was this choreographed dance.
Yeah, it's not two blade masters swinging around.
No, these are two regular folks, you know, trying to save their own lives, the lives of their spouse. And it was really well done, and it does set up his journey so well. It is exciting to think about where he's going to go with that, but
yeah,
it was gut-wrenching.
Mm-hmm.
Rob did gasp loudly.
Yeah.
The whole body reacted. We were sitting right next to each other in the world's tiniest chairs. So every time he moved...
We're both broad people as well.
Yeah,
so
oh, like, yeah.
Every time I moved, you knew about it.
Oh, yeah.
When you moved, I knew about
yep.
it. So.
But it happened in just, like, the visceral reaction that you had. Like, mm-hmm. I felt it. It was... It's, oof, it was tough. It really yeah. was.
But I don't know, I buy into the fact that he was married, that they're meant to be 20. They're mm-hmm. meant to, you know, like, they're meant to be basically almost settled guys. We'll move on to Matt's situation in a second. But, mm-hmm. you know, it didn't feel, it's not in the books, but it didn't feel weird that it was in the show.
No, not at all. No, yeah. there wasn't, there. I am not a purist to the extent that I'm going to be up in arms about something like that. I think that the more that they can set these characters up, to have depth right off the bat, the better it's going to resonate with people that haven't read the books. And this is exactly how you do that.
And whilst we're on Marcus and the Q&A being slightly mentioned, that intro, so like the head of Amazon, like all the cast a couple of the writers and producers were on stage at this little mini stage thing at the front, and they were all in chairs. And the head of Amazon, was it? Or like head of Amazon here or something like
yeah.
that?
Yeah.
I can't remember her exact position. I do apologize. She started introducing me, so I come on stage, and it was like, you know, a writer, then two producers, then it was Rafe, mm-hmm. and then it was Marcus was next in the queue of people,
correct?
But she didn't call out Marcus, so Marcus just sort of walked out as she was saying a name. It was like, oh wait, that's not me.
Yeah,
I was just like, okay, you know, did a little wave, and like next person on, and he kept expecting to be called next.
Yeah, they clearly practiced who was going where, and yeah. she had a list.
She had. She was reading off a page.
Yep,
she kept reading someone else.
And seeing him trying to dance around, because he's, you know, he's also a pretty big guy.
Yeah, exactly.
This really narrow stairwell to try and allow other people by so that they can come up on the stage was yeah. just... And he was very animated while he was
he
doing
was.
It.
He was. He was just like, oh, no, it's not me.
Yeah, okay, like he'd start know. To step out like, oh, here I go because it's clear. Oh, it's not me again. And it was really good.
Yeah, and then she got to... I think it was just before she called... who was last going around? It must have been Maddie. No, because it was Zoe, and then Marcus ended up moving back. But mm-hmm. it was like she called Zoe, and then Yosha, and then yeah, she must have called Maddie. And then she was like, "Oh, I did actually skip Marcus. I'm
yeah.
so sorry."
Yeah,
you know. And then they all scooped around their seats and things. And yeah, he was hilarious. The whole cinema was laughing about it. Sort of
oh thing. Yeah, it was really cool. I am really sad for the people that left. A, that left after the first episode.
Oh, yeah. The first episode.
Got up, and they didn't even turn the lights on in the theater. So
no,
it's not like it was like an intermission. They just yeah. rolled right into it and people left. And then afterwards, they had mentioned at the beginning of everything when they gave us the rules.
Yes.
Of what we could and could not do.
Yeah, so yeah, it was actual reactions with like, you know, just a standard reaction was fine.
Right.
But an actual review was embargoed until 5 p.m. UK time. On the Tuesday.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
But they did mention that they were going to be doing a Q&A. So the people that, A, left after the first episode was bizarre to me. Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, one person we know left because they were like, they had to get a train.
Yeah. Okay, fine. Yeah,
fine. Okay, but...
The people that left right after the second episode, like, when we say that they did this Q&A right afterwards, it was within 10 minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, the chairs were being set up, basically, as the credits finished, lights came up, and you saw them putting little ring of chairs on this mini stage.
And we weren't even allowed to leave down the stairs. If you wanted to leave, you then had to go up. So it was obvious that something was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And the screen may be large, but the theater itself was not.
No.
So we were right there, you know, we're 10 rows away.
Yeah.
But it was very cool. That was also very, the whole thing was, it was very intimate,
mm-hmm.
which I appreciated.
Yeah.
It, for my first and potentially only experience like that, I really appreciated and enjoyed that.
Yeah, I
really
enjoyed it too.
The Q&A session was awesome.
Yeah, it was very just fun. I wish it could have gone on longer, to be honest.
Yeah, and you know, I wish they would have either asked the audience to ask questions or maybe done some sort of like fan engagement ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
Because I did feel a little bit like the questions were the same questions that we've seen that have been asked, you know, what's your favorite part of filming? Well, they can't answer any of that because we've now just seen two episodes.
Yeah, Rosamund literally was just like, from the season or from the two episodes we just watched.
Yes.
And like, I feel like what someone, I think Rafe was like, from the two episodes we just watched, or yeah. someone said that, you know. Mm-hmm.
So then, that question, and then they talked again about, like, where everybody was at in the books, and just things that, you know, and this is not a criticism as much as it's a personal observation. I just felt like the questions were overdone.
Yeah.
They were things that we already knew. There were so many other things that I would have appreciated, like their reactions to yeah. seeing this now.
I mean, they must have seen it, but, right. you know, to see it on the IMAX screen like that.
Yeah.
To see it with that. Oh, and that was weird. So this is Rosamund doing her classic, I'm going to interview the interviewer.
Yes.
I love that Rosamund does that. If I ever get a chance to meet her and, you know, by God, die in the process, but interview her, I'm going to have to obviously prepare what she might ask me, because clearly she likes to ask the interviewers
and
questions.
And she looked phenomenal.
Oh, she was, yeah.
This
I mean,
bodysuit that she was wearing that had like a sheer dress over the top of it mm-hmm. with a hood, like... Yeah. Good on her. She didn't even have to do her hair. She probably didn't even wash her hair. She used dry shampoo. She flipped that hood up on there with that sexy bodysuit and was yeah. like, I'm good to go. Oh, like, yeah, yeah. I'm just that badass.
I mean, they all look pretty great.
They all did.
They all had a different look.
Yes.
You know, Maddie's there with, like, I love the gloves.
Yes.
Like, the dress.
Like, definitely yeah. old Hollywood style, mm-hmm. elbow length, black yeah. silk gloves. Very Marilyn Monroe vibes for me yeah. with, like, that champagne colored dress that
yeah.
she was wearing.
It was
it looked
very
good.
Yeah.
It looked good.
Yeah, they all looked great. And they all had, you know, different, like, you know, Daniel's wearing a shirt, Marcus is wearing some kind of, like, high-necked shirt, like, t-shirt under mm-hmm. his jacket. Yosha was wearing...
I think just a button-up.
Yeah, just
suit.
A button, mm-hmm. yeah, like a button-up and a suit.
Everybody looked great.
Yeah, they all look great. But speaking of the intimacy and that, and you know, being close to people, I was lucky enough to have Juliet Howland surround me when I found out she was going. She's like, come and say hi if I don't see you first, because it'd be nice to actually meet in person, because, you know, we have interacted a little bit. I consider myself very lucky there. She reached out to me about the parody and we've chatted a little bit here and there since. Juliet was sat in our row, two seats from me, which was incredible, because I saw her at the back of the cinema chatting to Lorne, the composer, mm. and then she came down and I was just like, she found out that this is a row. She's like, oh, I'm sorry I'm in this row. And we all stood up and I just sort of stood there and waved. I was like, hi, Juliet. And she's like, oh my God, Rob!
Yeah.
You know, I was like, she knows my name.
She knows your face.
She knows
who you are.
Yeah. You know, and so when she came along, she talked to me and, yeah, it kind of blew my mind a little bit. She said that she listens to my stuff all the time and says it's amazing and... Yeah, I didn't know what to say, did I?
No, it was great. It was a good moment. As yeah. your friend, seeing you get to experience something like that was really great.
Yeah.
It was adorable. Let's be honest here.
Yes.
It was adorable.
I'm sure it was. Yeah, I was a little stunned because, you know, to have someone say your stuff is great, it means they checked it out or something.
Yeah.
But when she said they're saying, like, oh, I listen all the time, it's amazing, and I love it, and this, that, the other, and I was like, she listens like an actual. So Juliet, thank you, because that would have been a highlight even if I'd met, well, maybe not if I'd met Daniel, but this is Daniel. Laniel, sorry. Laniel's a special case. But, you know, if I'd met anyone else, even Rosamund or Wraith, I feel like that moment with Juliet would have trumped anything else that evening. I mean, unless maybe Rosamund turned around and was like, oh, yes, I listened to your podcast. You know,
yeah.
if one of the others had said that as well, I feel like, okay, like, what's going on here? Like, did they just collectively get together as a group and put it on play or something? Like, yeah, that was a special highlight for me on a personal level. And then we chatted afterwards for as much time as security let us hang out before they tried to kick us. Not kick us. They were like, need to leave now, people. Come
yes.
on, you need to leave.
We're
know?
Trying to tear down this space. We're trying to build it back up for something else. She was incredibly nice.
Mm-hmm.
She really, really was.
Yeah.
But...
Oh, and she said about the hen news. So, I mean, I went on Talker Omriod a few months now. Just they invited me as a guest. Unfortunately, Jen couldn't make it. If you don't know Talker Omriod, you're missing out. Great podcast. And Jen just couldn't be there. And I know Jen does the hen news segment, which is where, you know, especially when there's been no news for periods of time, talks about Juliet's hens and the rescuing that she does. And it's just called hashtag hen news. So I knew about it, and I was like, don't worry, I'll do the hen news for you. And I did. I made this whole little bit about it. I don't know whether, you know, it was up to Jen's standard of hen news. But, yeah, it was then we tweeted about, yeah, come check out the hen news and stuff. And Juliet didn't know about it, apparently, and was just like, I wouldn't have known this if not for you. And now Rue's on a T-shirt, or I can't remember which one it was, but, yeah, one of them's on a T-shirt. And she was just like, my hens are famous thanks to you and Talker Omriod. And I was just like...
you're welcome, I suppose.
Yeah, she was fantastic. We've gone off on a huge tangent.
That's fine. Yeah.
We were talking about Rosamund and her interviewing the interviewer.
Yes.
And this was, I think I know what you're talking about, and I really did appreciate it.
Yes. So she turned around and she was like, I want to know what people think of the show. Like, and then she just asked the audience, like, who's here is, you know, who's here because they're fans? And I don't know about you. How many did you expect? Like, what percentage of the audience do you expect to be like, yes, that's us?
At least half. I want to, at least. I mean, in a perfect world, it would have been more than that.
Right.
But at least half.
Okay. So, I mean, are you counting people like Matt Hatch and Neighbors and that, who went there in official capacities, but are fans?
No.
Did you count? No. So people that are purely...
They were members of the press, I would consider them.
I think that's how I would... So, okay, half. I mean, I would have expected anywhere from 20 to 25% of the room to have been fans, as opposed to members of the press or crew or cast.
I just wear rose-colored glasses and I wanted half of it. Yeah, I mean, there.
Especially because there's, like, basically a screening today at the Tower of London and that's it for the UK, isn't it?
So yeah, as far as I know.
I expected there'd be a lot more than what there was. It was basically, like, our row.
Yeah.
It wasn't quite, like, that small, but I feel like it was...
Our row and five other people.
Yeah, basically. And we all just went, woo! And then realized we were the only ones doing it.
Thinking that, like, there's going to be all of these other excited people, and then we're like, well, that was awkward.
Yeah, you know? And then she's like, who's here who's not read the books? And there was more people!
Yep,
you
know? Like, absolutely.
You know, it's not cast or crew or something. And I was just like, then I felt extra special. Like, holy shit, they only invited like 20 fans, and I was one of them, you know, yeah. So.
That was a really cool part. She interviews so well. I really liked when she was talking about her self-critique as Moraine. Mm-hmm. Not of her acting, but of, like, well, you know.
Moraine, she just gets her way.
She knows what she wants, and she gets it, and she maybe doesn't recognize the effect it has on other people, but...
Yeah, I can't remember the word she used.
I can't either.
It was like, basically Moraine just doesn't... not she doesn't think of others, but she doesn't just consider it in that moment type thing.
Yeah.
And then Lanyel's comment of how, like, we interview a lot together, and I have this amazing answer built up and ready to go, and Rosamund goes first, and I'm just like, yeah, what she said.
Yeah. Their relationship is, it's great. Mm-hmm. You know, seeing...
Oh, when you start off full frontal, it's going to be, you know, pretty... You're going to be comfortable pretty quickly, aren't you?
That's true. The key to a long-lasting friendship.
To start with a full frontal bath.
Full frontal. Oh my god. Someone needs to test this theory. So if you're listening to this and you don't have a best friend that's a member of the opposite sex, or even, I think it needs to be a member of a different gender.
Yeah,
That, you know, identifies a different gender than you do.
Yeah.
Try and see if that works. Tell us if that's effective, if that builds, like, the foundation to a very long-lasting and trusting friendship.
But it's got to be an old-style bathtub.
Yeah.
And then complain the water's not hot enough.
Yeah, I can imagine their off-screen chemistry, just them sitting there together, was great.
Yeah, they looked like they were sitting complimentary. They looked like they were friends, you know.
Yeah.
He even said, like, oh, I noticed
their mannerisms were the same. Yeah.
You know, they're like, him and Rosamund are like hitting the floor from the horses at the same moment. They're stepping together, and he's like, and then I was watching us, like, watching the show, and I realized we were both in the same pose.
Yeah.
And that was when I looked at them both, and they were in, like, mirror poses together, and I was like, okay, well, yeah, clearly there's a good bond there between the two of them. Choice of words being deliberate there.
Yes.
So that was really nice. Just that little Q&A was fun. I think they stole it, to be honest.
They did.
You know, Marcus and Maddie and Zoe and everybody.
They're inexperienced. They're young. You could tell they were nervous, and you know, they don't want to be the Tom Holland, right?
Exactly.
Spoil everything.
In fact, what was the question? And everyone just sort of looked over to Ray.
He's like, "I'll answer that."
I was
one.
Like, "I feel like I should answer this question."
I think it was maybe something to do with the next season, or I don't know.
Oh yeah, they're scouting desert locations.
Yeah, and they did say that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, very interesting stuff. God. So back to the show now. We've talked about the Q&A. That was just fun.
Yeah, it really... Well, and I think when she was talking about how Moraine kind of gets her way, and I would say bulldozes,
that's an apt description. I would say,
at the end of the second episode, she's laying in Lon's arms.
Woken up because they're in Chattanooga. He's like, yeah, she passed out prior. And he's like, trollocs are chasing us. Marcus, take it. Oh, he didn't say Marcus, obviously. He was like, just take it, gave it to Baron. And they go running into Chattanooga to escape the trollocs. Yeah, the ends of it. She wakes up, like, just gives him the most, like, oh my god, what the fuck have you done?
Look. Like, where are you? Where are we? Yeah. Like, it doesn't matter that you've saved my life, that you've gotten these four safely somewhere away from the Trollocs, and I've been completely rendered useless at this point.
Yeah.
Just wakes up and looks at him, realizes where they're at, and is like, well, you've killed us all.
Yeah, and he was just like, what the fuck did you want me to do, look?
Yeah. Yeah, like, and you would have done what?
Yeah, exactly. What would you have done different? I had no choice. Yeah.
It's a very great scene, just because she's been completely passed out.
Yeah.
Unresponsive. Mm-hmm. He's doing his best in a very challenging situation, and she just opens those eyes up, and she's just salty.
Yeah, she is so
salty. She is so salty, and he's like, well, a typical man, you've now killed all of us. Yeah. I hope you're happy with your decision making. You didn't stop and ask for directions like I told you to, so now we're gonna die.
Yeah, basically. Love it, yeah. Oh, God.
Oh, and that the scene where, what is it, Rand, I think it's Rand and Matt go outside of whatever building that they're in, mm-hmm. and the darkness touches the horse.
Oh, God, and the horse dying.
Oh my gosh, that was
just sort of breaking down into nothing in the process.
That was scary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in a good way. Not, you know, not like pop-up Halloween scary, you know, watching the blackness, the darkness moving up the horse's front legs and flank and everything, and just the horse rearing up and screaming, and it just kind of like slowly consuming it, and then the horse laying down dying, which is very sad. I don't like it when they kill animals in shows, but you know, and then it just turned to ash.
Yeah,
it was like, well, shit. what is this going to do to a person? Like, holy cow!
I mean, I'm just thinking now when Padme Thane basically has those powers.
Yeah,
like what the fuck is going to go? That's going to be
Yeah,
there's some serious setup there. I like that.
So. Yes, yeah. And when they all go fleeing and they all get separated, I think it's really well done. And
It worked well with how it happens in the books. They're not on horses.
Right.
You know, Matt and Rand have gone exploring. Matt's gone exploring. Rand goes looking for him or something. And then they come back and it's just like, you know, they get separated in that process. And it felt like, oh, this is almost how it's described in the books. Except they're on horses and they've gotten separated by the groups and stuff, and they've dashed off. And instead of it being Lan and Moraine that's been separated from the kids, it's the kids breaking up in their two groups by it instead. And I was just like, works really well.
Yeah.
I love it.
You know? Yeah. There was just so many great things. Mm-hmm. You know, really there was. I love the fact that Egwene and Rand sleep together.
Yes.
At the very beginning. Mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, it needed to happen. It was an important character development.
Well, if they'd stayed, you know, they're like 16 and 17 or something like that in the books. Mm-hmm. They're in their 20s now.
Yes.
You know, they've been aged up. It's appropriate that they would have made it to that stage of their relationship.
Yes.
And then him pissed off that she's going to become a wisdom and thus can't marry her kids.
Yes.
So it worked really well.
Yeah, it did. And it made their relationship, you know, when they were having that conversation, you can tell that she doesn't want to hurt him. She loves him.
Mm-hmm.
But she's also making a choice that's going to better everybody.
Yeah.
You know, obviously the wisdom is there to do so much for the whole community. And it's a really challenging decision for her, but, you know, one that she feels like is right. And he gets it.
Yeah.
But, you know.
He's still hurt by it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And how would you not be?
Absolutely,
you know?
Yeah.
But it was really well done. I really appreciate their relationship. And then there's a little bit more strife later on when she just wants that comfort from him. And he's a little bit unwilling at first to give it to her. You know, he's still hurt.
Yeah.
But they play that so well. Their chemistry is also really great.
Yeah, like, they have good chemistry.
Yeah.
And later on, I think that's going to just spell into, you know, oh, we used to be in a relationship and then we were like kind of friends and then we've both gone off on our separate paths.
Yeah.
And now we're in these positions of power. And I think that dynamic is going to play pretty well across the rest of the series.
Yeah, absolutely. I hope so. They're doing such a good job of explaining things as they go, at least in my opinion.
No, I agree.
In the 2 hours that we've watched this, but their relationship, it feels real.
Yeah.
You know, it feels the way that they interact with each other, you know, him gazing longingly at her across the wine spring in while she's serving tables, and you know, he wants to know how things went with the women's circle, it was a really good scene, and it just made you feel like all squishy on the inside.
It did, yeah. I agree with that.
Yeah.
Someone else who was, you know, I know obviously Barney wasn't there last night,
right?
You know, for I say obvious reasons, but we don't know his reasons for not being involved anymore.
Right.
You know, I hope he's okay and all those usual bits and pieces, because you know, they're not going to tell us, and there's no need for them to tell us. But his performance, I don't know, it felt right.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed it. I loved we'll get into his story in a second. But just the way he played Matt, I don't know, I felt a little bit like you won't know this so well, but like an East End London boy. I got vibes of that, and it fit for Matt, in my opinion, especially with the upbringing he's clearly had based on what they've done with his parents and his sisters. So Juliet, by the way, nails Matt's mother in the way they took it, not the way it's appeared in the books, but I don't know, just that makes a lot of sense to me as well.
Yeah.
You know, based on how his character is and what he does later on, and the way he behaves like I'm no bloody hero.
Yeah.
You know, both his parents, really, both of them.
Like, their behavior together and independent from one another really does, again, you're setting up who this character is supposed to be, so that later on, when they exhibit these specific behaviors and characteristics, it makes sense. You can reference back to, oh, okay, I remember in the beginning when, you know, Perrin kills his wife, when Matt's dad is a womanizing ass.
Yeah, and his mother's a drunk.
Yeah, and don't care about the children. And
exactly. He's got to look after his kids, and he steals for that to give them lanterns for Beltane. And,
yeah.
You know, and then he's going to turn around at the end of it and be like, I don't deserve to be in charge of anything, because my mother turned around to me when I was 20 and be like, you're just going to be like your father. And, you know, that sort of onus being put on you to then be in charge of people and save the world and all that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just, what a setup.
Yeah.
Again, foreshadowing that's just
absolutely
so, so good.
Yeah.
So I have no issues with Matt's parents being played as shit, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it lends a lot of credence to, you know, how he behaves and what he becomes later on in life. Not that, you know, every person becomes what their parents are,
exactly. But
it does explain some, you know, some of the things. Again, back to if you haven't read the books, and you want to understand some of the behavior, they're giving an opportunity to show that, which I really appreciate.
I did also enjoy how Juliet turned right after and be like, not what you expected.
She did. She really did.
You little devil, you set up that so well. No one thought that was coming, you know. The look on her face was like, yes.
Yes.
And it was like, oh, yes, well done. Loved
yes.
it.
So. Yeah, it was fantastic.
I loved his sisters, the way Matt was very protective over them as well.
Yeah.
Which his, you know, Matt as a character, his, I don't know, just desire is not the word, just his ability to always be like, right, well, I need to go save these women now. You know, like just that, the way he does that throughout the story.
Yeah.
You know, it just screams to me, while they're setting up with his sisters, he's like, well, I've got to, you know, screw myself over to save someone else. You know, my little sisters or, you know, another woman or something like that. So, again, very Two Rivers in terms of how the men have written in the Two Rivers story. You know. But
the scene where they're all on horseback and Matt starts singing the song about
Nephrin.
Again, another fantastic scene. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they I'm going to call them kids because that's what they are. You know, that's how they feel.
Season three, they can be.
Yeah, you know, they can be adults then.
Adults then, yeah.
But, you know, they start singing this song and, you know, it's just a song that you can tell that they've grown up around. Mm-hmm. It doesn't necessarily have any meaning to them any longer. It's just something, you know, that they're singing.
And it's not even like they were all singing the same words. Like, Marcus was in the back singing some kind of, like, I don't know, a complimentary track or something. But it worked, you know?
Like Two Rivers pentatonic situation happening, right?
Yeah, it really was.
They're their own acapella thing.
Two Rivers acapella.
Yes.
Oh, that folks, if you're an acapella, I can't sing for shit, but, if you're out there, you do acapella, get in on that, because you've got a great bass song to work with.
Yeah, but the way that they just sing it and the pause Maureen has where she's like, do they understand the weight of what's happening here? Do they know about any of this? And then goes on to explain Menethrin and the battle and everything.
Yeah.
That was one of those scenes where it just felt so, like, it's going to resonate for so long, and it explains so much about why they are the way that they are. Yeah. You know, you come from this group of people that were so strong and did so much to defend themselves and, you know, fought until the very end kind of thing. So,
and the, you know, the women and children coming down from the mountain right at the end is foreshadowing for the Battle of the Two Rivers, mm-hmm. when the women join the men, the lions and such.
Yeah.
And it felt very natural. It felt like a conversation that would happen and that moment in traveling. So it didn't feel like, oh, we're going to slow everything down for exposition now.
Yeah.
You know, and Moraine, most of her lines felt very direct from the story of Menephrin anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there was just no flaming torch running around and shit, but, you know, that's fine.
Yeah.
Because they were just walking their horses down a country lane, in effect.
Right.
So, she delivered it well.
Yeah. She does that a couple of times, too, you know, when she's talking about the three oaths and when she talks to Egwene about the One Power.
Yeah, because Egwene's like, you lied. And she's like, I didn't.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm crafty.
All Aes Sedai are my sisters. You said we're meeting your sister. You have a sister in Whitebridge? All Aes Sedai are my sisters.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Where did you come from? We came from Taran Ferry, you know, Taran Ferry. Yes, you did come from there, but the White Cloak was asking, where did you come from originally?
Right.
You know, but she said, well, I physically, we've just come from Taran Ferry.
Yeah.
That's how she was answering, and the White Cloak heard what he wanted to hear. So,
yeah.
And the White Cloaks are great.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Can we dive into that?
Yeah. I mean, well, first, when they're confronted that way, we talked about this last night. It is a little questionable that the White Cloaks did not immediately recognize her as Aes Sedai.
But there's no ageless look.
Right, but she's wearing a blue cloak, and she's got blue ribbon woven in her hair.
Yes.
She's clearly a badass. She's got Lan, and come on, like, clearly he's a warder. Like, what are the two of them doing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean...
Maybe they're playing the, you know, White Cloaks are a little stupid type card.
They're brutal.
They are brutal.
Yeah.
And the questioners are called questioners as well. Like, there's not seekers of the truth or anything like that.
And
which is fine. I like that simplification there.
The questioner is...
Whew, yeah, the guy... I forget his name now. Colin Frizzell's friend from Love Actually. you'll never watch Love Actually again after you've seen him in this position, honestly. Dark. Because I miss what he said because I was focused on like what he was eating. Like, I actually didn't hear what he said. I honestly thought he was eating her tongue. And I know it wasn't because he started talking about the bones slicing your jaw, your gums and stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, they just, and then we go around and she's got her hands chopped off. Good spot, Lauren, with the green gloves. Yeah, and then he picks up the hands from the table nearby.
Plucks the ring off of it like, you know, every day of his life. He's just handling hands that are no longer attached to a body.
Yeah.
Just casually clips it onto his little badass belt.
Mm-hmm. And then sits there and drinks his wine while she burns at the stake.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're impressive. Their costumes are just so... intimidating.
Yeah.
They really are. You know, they're very militaristic.
Not functional militaristic, speaking.
No.
But I don't think that matters for the White Cloaks.
No.
In fact, that's probably a little point of pride for them. We don't need full armor.
Right.
I mean, I discussed this with Peter, and he loves them.
Mm-hmm.
They're not functional in any way whatsoever.
No.
But, you know, he loved them anyway, so...
No, I mean, people in positions of power sometimes get this idea that they're untouchable.
Yeah.
I think
see a White Cloaks as general thinking that. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think the White Cloaks are a really perfect example of groupthink, where you have all of these potentially intelligent people, but you get together and you've just functioned so well together that you're no longer capable of making rational choice and decisions. But the costuming is great. The setup in the camp when they're burning the Aes Sedai is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And starting to see kind of that tension between, you know, when they finally depart, the tension between the questioners and everyone else.
Yeah.
There's some good foreshadowing there.
Yeah,
too.
It was very subtle tension as
it
well.
Was. Yeah.
You know, because he was like, oh, if with my lord's permission, I'll take a group of questioners. And,
yeah.
You know, the lord was just like, go on then, sort of look on his face.
Yeah. Like, okay.
Yeah. It was very well done.
Yes.
I really enjoyed that.
Yeah. They were, for me in the books, they felt chaotic and disorganized a lot of times for me. They just kind of popped
up. And ineffective.
They pop up at random times.
Mm-hmm.
But...
They feel menacing.
They do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have high hopes. Not that, you know, I want the bad guys to win, but I have high hopes for the direction that they're going to go in. And they're very cool.
Yeah. I agree.
But speaking of bad guys, the Trollocs. holy shit.
Oh, yeah.
The, you know, I know that there were a couple of people that pointed out in trailer reactions and stuff, or any of the extras that Amazon's released, some of the Trollocs running on all fours.
Yeah.
Is, and it happens multiple times in, you know, even in some daytime scenes, which I really appreciated that they had a number of scenes with them in daylight where you got a better look at them. But him running on all four was, whew, that's nightmare fuel there.
Yeah.
You know, I'll be laying in bed clutching my teddy bear.
I mean, there was a strong presence of, like, boar or goat-style ones. You know, like, there was a lot of that style. That was, like, a prevalent one.
Yeah.
We do see that bird one that gets hit by fireballs, but I don't think I saw any others, really, unless I probably, like, froze screens. Obviously, I couldn't, like, oh, I'll just pause it here, you know.
Excuse me, wait, can we go frame by frame so that I can examine all of the hot Trolloc bodies.
All right, I'm not Matt Hatch now, okay?
The amount of abs in those scenes, though, like, good on those Trollocs, man.
Yeah, they're
keeping themselves in shape.
Yeah, oh, fuck yeah, they are. yeah, they were just, they were brutal. We saw people being eaten.
Yes.
Like, mid-battle. Not even, like, it's not like they won and they started to eat.
No. There's bodies, like, laying on the ground and they're going to town.
Yeah, literally, like, oh, I'll swipe you. Give up on anything else in terms of the fight and just start to eat.
Gorge myself on intestines. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it was, and that's how Trollocs are described.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah, they're really base instincts take over and all they're interested in doing is killing and eating.
Yeah.
And we see that and they're frightening. The scene where they're crossing the river.
Yeah.
And they're all lined up, you know, you can tell that they're mad. And,
yeah.
They're just really well done. And, you know, back when we were talking about the Q&A at the end of it, there were, Rosamund was talking about, you know, somebody's wrangling the Trollocs, like,
yeah.
Does everyone have their feet on? Yeah, is everyone wearing their gloves?
Yeah, does everyone have their head on?
Yeah.
You know? And I thought that would have been the most difficult part, you know?
I can just imagine that, like, you know, because there's a sizable amount of them and just, you know, we've all seen the movies and the TV shows where a Starbucks cup shows up or whatever, but how great would it be if, you know, here's this mad war scene and there's all these Trollocs and there's like one human leg.
Yeah, he's like got a Nike on or something like that, you know. That Trolloc shop's at the Gap.
Yeah, they are fantastic. They're scary.
Mm-hmm.
The noises that they make, they did a really good job with that.
Yeah.
You know, I think post Jurassic Park era we get like that T-Rex kind of scream a lot.
We do, yeah.
With those types of characters, and I feel like that didn't happen at all.
I feel like they were actually using, I don't know, I was getting like a bull kind of vibe out there.
There was a lot of like grunting. I liked it. I thought it was good. There was some like kind of howling and hacking sounds.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. We're going to get like some wolfish style ones and some bird style ones and things. So those things are going to happen. But I feel like just hog or boar and things like that, those are going to be the prominent ones.
Yeah.
So I feel like they actually went to those animals and filmed and like recorded the sounds.
Yeah. Just, you know, and then angry pig.
No, but then amped them up with other noises rather than just do Jurassic Park, which was basically, if I remember correctly, they took a bit of a blue whale, they took a lion, and they took an elephant, a bull elephant, and like merged those with a couple other things I can't remember. Only just touched the other things.
I think an alligator, because they do that hissing sound.
They do, so, and as you say, that's been used a lot over the years. And this didn't feel anything like that.
No, it didn't.
It felt very natural.
Natural.
Very natural.
Natural Trolloc sound.
Yeah, natural Trolloc sound.
But it made sense with the anatomy of the Trollocs.
Yes.
Like looking at their faces and the composition of them, those sounds felt right.
So, but we didn't get a Narg talking scene.
We did not.
No, we did get a Narg. We did get one Trolloc at the farmhouse.
We did.
And then
Tam being a badass.
Tam was just a badass. We got like the box being drawn out from under the bench.
Yes.
And, you know, it was impressive.
It was.
Yeah.
It really was. And, you know, watching Rand watch his father suddenly become this
Blade Master.
Yeah. And you can tell he's just like stunned. Like, what? Like, who is this?
Yeah.
Who is this?
What's Dad doing? Like,
yeah.
And he's like, oh shit, I should shoot him with a bow and arrow. Not Dad, obviously, the Trolloc. But I should shoot him with a bow and arrow now.
Yeah.
But I feel like if we'd gotten talking, it would have hammed it up. Just the entire battle scene.
Yeah.
know, if we got a talking trollop then. As much as it was great in the books and creepy,
yeah,
because we're not playing the whole, you know, the whole storyline with Rand after the farmhouse fight.
Yeah.
Just not dropping anything there in case folks are not book, are book readers or want, no, aren't book readers and then want to read the books. I don't want to give anything away there. we're talking specifically show. Yeah, it wouldn't have worked there because, yeah. Even though, like, with Rosamund taking all the Trollocs out at the end, which is fucking amazing, because we were like, how does the Winespring get destroyed?
Yes.
We were like, the end of the battle, and the Winespring is still standing. What's going on?
There's nobody fighting inside. Most of the fighting occurred, like, in, you know, in the village and outside, but yes.
Yeah, we did not get, you know, someone blowing up the kitchen with flour or flour bomb or something, you know. I was like, what has Mistress Aldea baked this time? You know, something's gone wrong. Did she let the mayor bake instead? But yeah, basically, Rosamund just pulls all the stones out of the Winespring to hurl this mob of Trollocs.
Yes.
Including the keystone of the building, which then causes the left side of the building to just fall to pieces.
Yeah. It's a great
And that's scene. After she's been stabbed in the shoulder.
Yes. Yeah. And she knows that she's gonna expend all of her energy doing this.
Yeah.
There's that resignation on her face and you know, Lan's the same way.
Yeah. Light give me strength, she said.
Yes. Yeah, and that was awesome. You know, she was wielding the power the whole time, and it was awesome.
Yeah.
And I loved the variety where there were the fireballs, the lightning. Yes. I love me some lightning powers. Oh, I think if I could have something like that, that would be a lot of fun.
And she even seemed shocked that she set the tree alight, didn't she?
Yeah.
She's like, fuck, I didn't mean to set the tree on fire, you know.
Well.
Oops.
Pleasantly surprised with my badassery.
Yeah.
But seeing kind of the variety of the things that she could do, was awesome, and then at that end piece where she just basically rips apart the Winespring to hurl the projectiles that are the bricks at the Trollocs, and some of them are smaller and some of them are massive.
Yeah, the keystone's huge.
Yes.
That felt bigger than a person.
Yeah.
That felt like it was a Trolloc size.
Oh, absolutely. It was huge.
Yeah.
That was a good scene.
And the scene when Lan rushes to, like, not... I thought he was going to try and catch her, but he didn't. He just wanted to leap over and protect her as she fell to the floor.
Yeah.
Because the inn collapsed, and all right, it was dust cannons they were using, but it wasn't CGI. In the Q&A, they were like, no, that was physical effects. Mm-hmm. Daniel Henney literally outran dust cannons to then sweep up. It was all just perfectly timed.
Yeah.
So
getting to see some of his fighting prowess was awesome too.
Oh, yeah.
I'm excited to see more of that as we move along. It was very, you know, poetry in motion kind of thing. It was beautiful.
Yeah, he was very flowing and very complimentary to her movements. Yeah. So,
as much as the Perrin scene was, you know, brutal, graphic, violent fighting
where you're just scrapping and shit, This was artistic.
It was. It really was.
What did you think about Nynaeve getting kidnapped, basically yanked off by her braid?
I was shocked. You know, and then to continue on with the next episode. She's not in it at all.
Yeah.
I mean, logically, we know that she's fine.
Yeah.
But, yeah. And I think what shocked me more was that Egwene just was like, oh shit, Nynaeve. Bye! Like, deuces. Like, fucks off. Like, she just runs off.
She thought that she'd been, like, you know, Trolloc lunch.
She didn't even try!
That Trolloc was moving fast.
Yeah, I don't know.
It was like, you know, Usain Bolt whipped in, grabbed a brain, and fucked off.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
Like, they were running together, and then suddenly fucking Nynaeve's going the other direction.
The other direction, by a brain,
Yeah, but, I mean, that meant a lot more people died, I think, afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah, because she wasn't there to... You didn't feel her absence until they left the city, though.
Yeah.
I think until you know, we're on the road with everybody else and you know, having read the books, you're just like, wait, she's supposed to be here. This is supposed to be a thing.
Yeah, you've got the Chattanooga. She's meant to be catching up. But she's meant to have caught up by this stage.
Yeah.
But you just, I mean, I think I turned to you at the end and be like, this is where Nynaeve's going to come in.
Yeah,
and this is
you
where
did.
Yeah, I was like, right, Nynaeve's going to turn up and it's going to stop right there type thing. And she did.
Yes.
And I was like, I feel like anyone who's not read the books is still going to expect that. I feel like there was no ta-da about her dying. It was just like, she's dead. Okay, we'll move on. There was a little bit of tears or a little bit of chat about it somewhere.
You know,
but it was like... Nynaeve is dead, Lyra's dead, or Layla, or whatever her fucking name is, you know. And a nice focus on Marcus there. He's just like, oh, I didn't tell you that, I fucking killed her. You can just see that on his face. It was really, you know, without him saying anything, the expression was there. But aside from those couple of moments, it didn't feel like, you know, any big deal that Nynaeve
No, it was just another person from the town that exactly. was dead.
You know, and she was made a big deal to start with. You know, the mm-hmm. whole women's circle introduction yeah. and, you know, we didn't get the scene with her rising out of the water with the colours, so clearly that's an Aes Sedai thing.
It must be, yeah.
Yeah, it must it be, but, be. Which means they go to the tower this season and she gets initiated, I reckon.
Yeah, that would make sense. Yeah.
Or that's a dream, but anyway. But yeah, so it's not like Nynaeve wasn't made a, you know, a deal of as a main character. I mean, she's named in the credits and everything like that. People are going to know that she's part of it.
Right.
So I feel that anyone watching the show who hasn't read the books is going to be like, well, she's got to be coming back, surely. This is going to be like when Tom died in the books.
Yes.
You know, yep. And then it's like, he's not dead. He can't be dead.
He can't be dead, right?
You know, this is going to be the same with Nynaeve.
Why would we spend that much time building up a character that we just kill off that quickly?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, and then the way she reappears.
Blade to Lan's neck. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, like, yeah. Yanks that beautiful hair back and is like, yeah, I'm going to get you.
Exactly. Yeah, like Lan and Moraine have run out of Shadowlogoth. He's lost all the kids. He's just been bitched out by Moraine. He finds a little quiet place, lays her down, and then literally from over his shoulder, which means she snuck up behind the guy,
yep.
Blade to the side of the neck, and she's like, she looks like she's, you know.
She's been through it.
She's been through it.
She's
exactly.
been through it. She looks like a badass.
Yeah. And which is fucking brilliant. Yeah. I know Nynaeve's not your favorite character, but I feel like Zoe's fucking pulling
I am going to the show having reset all of my expectations and opinions because they have to be different because it's a TV show. Yes,
absolutely, yeah.
So
I feel like she made a stellar start on it, yes, to be honest. Yes. I didn't like Nynaeve when I first read the books, so...
I didn't like Nynaeve through any of the books.
Yeah, I know this. I've grown to appreciate her place in the story later on.
Yeah.
I sort of think I'd want to be friends with her, but, you know, I've grown to appreciate her place.
Yeah.
But yeah, just the way, you know, sneaks out behind him, like, it's a perfect setup for their relationship.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
The fact that even in that moment, Lan should not be distracted enough exactly. to be snuck up on by anybody, let alone some farm girl,
right.
basically,
yeah.
from some back and water village.
Yes.
You know, and she gets the complete drop on him, and she doesn't act like, oh, I'm surprised I managed to get the drop on him. She's like, no, this is how it fucking works.
Yeah.
And I've got a knife to your throat.
Enraged.
Oh, yeah, she is.
She is mad.
Take them to me now, yeah. or I'll kill you.
Yes.
And she means. You can tell she means.
Yes. And she's burnt. You yes. can tell. You know, she looks like she has like the burns and everything, and she's dirty.
Yeah.
And she's gritty. It was great.
Yeah.
That was great.
It's definitely. I mean, that scene with the Trolloc, which is, I did show you that, didn't I?
Hmm.
Where I was like her in the water in the pool and the trolloc,
yes.
yeah,
yeah.
That's got to be. I said it was going to be a flashback scene.
Yeah,
I
didn't. It has to be. Yeah,
so it's going to be a flashback scene because mm-hmm. there's no way they've shared that out as a little promotional bit somewhere and then not.
No,
you know, not going to show it in the show.
No,
like how did you get away? Oof, this.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's been through it and she's just like, no, where are my fucking kids?
Yeah,
you know, like take me now or I will absolutely just decapitate you and fucking go find them anyway.
Yeah. I don't need you.
I don't need
you. I'll do it myself.
It's going to make it faster if I've got you showing me. But right. I don't fucking need you, so don't feel like I'm going to not slit your throat here.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was... That must have been something to film.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah. Yeah, and it just ends there, episode
it
2.
It does, and you're just like, no!
Yeah.
Yes! Like, I can't even... I am sad, you know, we're a quarter of the way through at this point now.
We've watched 25% of season 1.
Yes.
You know?
And that makes me really sad. You know, I want this to be 14 episodes. I want this to be something. Obviously, it's something to look forward to, and we'll get to see the next one on Friday. But I mean, just overall, it was so well done.
Yeah,
and it was such a great experience too. But just, you know, the way that they're setting things up, the foundation that they're laying, mm-hmm. you know, it's the most important thing as you build your house, as you build any structure. Like if you don't have a solid foundation. Anything that you put on the outside, any of the decorations, they don't matter because you don't have that strong base and it can't last.
Exactly.
So they're putting the work into it now, but doing it in a way that's not long and drawn out and boring. And, you know, you see that with movies and TV series where you just get so lost in it. And it doesn't feel that way here. Like they're moving through things quickly. We cover what? Probably... I would have to say 4 or 5 days at least. Would you say?
What, in the show or in the books?
In the show.
In the show, yeah.
In the first 2 episodes.
Yeah, it feels like,
we're a week in.
It's got to be a week, you know.
Yeah.
Even if it's one of our weeks and not a, you know, a Lan week. Lanyu Lenny. I don't know, however he wanted it. Lanyu Lano. he wanted that. He wants everything but Lan.
Yeah, and I'm all for it.
Yeah, so Lan.
Lan for president.
Yeah, Lan for president. Make that hashtag, folks. Lan for president. I just love the fact that he loves dad jokes. I'm trying to find it. I've written off to a couple of people, like, can I send a joke book to Amazon and then you forward it to Daniel Henney? Like, obviously I don't want his address. That's not an appropriate thing to ask for, but I want to send him a joke book. How can I do this? Because like, he loves dad jokes. So I'm just like, you need to read my jokes. but yeah, even if it's our week instead of the Lan week, which is 10 days and ours is 7, like that's, it still feels like that. Yeah. It's got to be about a weekish type of time frame.
Yeah.
You know, there's definitely, even the scouting moments, like there's traversing the lands, mm-hmm. you know, there's days being passed there and they're throwing in the key moments of the land suddenly appearing or coming back or there's something other, yes. like scouting in the story is set. So
yeah.
Oh, what about those opening credits for episode 2?
Oh, fantastic.
It felt extremely Bond at the beginning. I was just like, oh, where are they going with this?
What is happening here? They're weaving. It's the weaving and it's, oh. The different colors for the Aes Sedai and like how beautiful the tapestry is because it's all part of this tapestry.
Yeah. There was an actual one of those old school like weaves. Loom.
Yeah,
an old school loom. It was like, but it felt giant as if it was weaving a world.
Right.
A universe. Yes. You know? Yeah. Which just, I mean, obviously thematically fits very well, but it didn't feel out of place.
No, it didn't. And the different representations for each of the Ajahs and the colors and the different women that they used for each of them, mm-hmm. they were beautiful and captivating and like it was just so well done. Yeah. It was so exciting.
I thought one looked like Tuwana originally.
I was like, what? Who are these women? Like, what's happening here? I thought the same thing.
Yeah, and then it pulled back the and you're like, thing. Oh, it's okay. The seven Ajahs in a wheel. Oh, okay. Yeah, because initially the first character, like one of the first women that like got woven on screen. I was like,
yes.
That looks how Tuwana's described in the books. So I was like, oh, okay, like, are we throwing in like uber foreshadowing here? And then it was like Aes Sedai in a circle. And I was like, oh, okay, right. Yeah, I see where we're going with it. I still fucking love it. I would have loved either option, but
I am excited to see where costumes go from mm-hmm. here because obviously, you know, we've predominantly been in the Two Rivers where everything's a lot more simplistic and basic. Yeah. And then, you know, Moraine's only really worn the one outfit, which is an epic outfit.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the shoulder, we've talked about this, the shoulder pad thing, like, bring me back to the 80s. I love a good shoulder pad.
You were rocking them last night.
I did.
You looked fucking amazing.
Thank you. but, you know, seeing the opening credits like that with the different, you know, costumes that they have and whether we actually see anything like that or not, you know, I don't know. But getting to see more detail of that is going to be really exciting. You know, we saw a brief glimpse of Red Sisters.
Oh, yeah, the very beginning.
Yes.
Yeah, Taylor didn't like that.
No, he did not.
No. I like, you got to have a mystery when you start something like this. There's got to be something that doesn't connect to the rest of what you see. That is like, yeah, but what the fuck was that at the beginning?
Yes.
You know, and it's...
Because I want to come back and figure it out.
Yeah. It's Leandrin chasing down a guy who... What? Two guys. We tell. And it's there, and one of the guy encourages the other, like, come on, you can use it. Just, you know, do it. Protect us. Save us.
Yes.
And he's like, I can't do that. And then Leandrin's like, who the fuck are you talking to? It's just you, mate.
Yeah.
You know, because he's like, dude, don't punish him. Just punish me. And she's like, dude, it's just you. What the fuck?
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. And he looks over and he's genuinely shocked that he's laying there on the ground by himself.
Yeah, like, oh, the madness already has you. Mm-hmm. And it's like, poof, disappear. Like, mystery got, you know, there's your mystery.
Yeah.
Fuck off to something else. And I was like,
yeah, like, who are these women?
Yeah.
You know, and why are they chasing him? And what are we talking about? You just do it. Protect us. And, you know, where is this person gone?
Like, what a setup for Andrew's character. Like, you know, this is why women are only allowed to have power sort of thing. Like, you know, this power is not for men.
Yeah.
And I was just like, ooh, what a setup for her. Like, but are they setting the Reds up to hate men? I hope they don't. I want to see Reds that like men, just don't want to be involved with men.
Yeah.
You know, on their professional basis.
Yeah.
You know, I don't see Reds being out there like, I fucking hate men, I can't be around a man type.
Right.
I've never got that vibe. You know, being wary of men because of men channeling sort of situation, I get.
Yeah.
But I've never understood the like, Reds hate men vibe that people give out. And I was like, no, they just don't want to have men involved in what they're doing.
Right.
And they feel that men generally are, you know, because of the male channelers.
Yeah.
You know, it should be...
They're seeing some of the worst...
Yeah, they deal with the worst...
Examples of, yeah, the worst of men, because yeah. that's what they deal with. Yeah. yeah.
You know, that doesn't mean they hate men all, yeah. all completely. So I hope they don't do that.
I just don't see how they could.
No.
I mean, it would turn a number of people against your TV series if, yeah. you know, a group of the characters and it hated men and treated them that yeah. terribly. But yeah,
good introduction.
It was
very cold, very different yes. to what the rest of the two episodes were.
Yeah,
so I get where Taylor's coming from. Yep. I still liked it because I'm like, you need a mystery to start a show.
Yeah,
every show needs a mystery to start.
Yeah,
like I don't care what your science fiction, drama, whatever it is, you have some kind of mystery or unknown element, or like this needs more information, or this is the setup for the series, or something.
Yeah,
you know, that is questionable. You're like, what makes people think, like, are you going to answer that?
Yeah, what is that?
Yeah,
and they do it. To a lesser extent with the White Cloaks, because we get a little bit more of them.
Yeah.
But, like, who are these men?
Yeah.
You know? And maybe people don't catch that it's all men.
Yeah.
You know? And you don't necessarily understand why Moraine takes her ring off and gives it to Lan. And
that's actually not... Well, I mean, you see the Aes Sedai being killed, but...
Right. But you don't... We go into this. You don't know this.
Yeah.
You have not read these books. You don't understand.
Yeah. You don't get the basis of why they specifically chase Aes Sedai.
Yeah.
And then it's even complicated by the fact he's like, oh, only an Aes Sedai can heal this wound, because she shows the wound.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you should try and see one.
It's yes! The way that he handles mm-hmm. it. Like, go to town and find an Aes Sedai that can yeah. help you, and it's like,
the only one who can.
How are you encouraging people?
I think that he's playing Pedronaro's character, because Pedronaro, although he didn't want the Aes Sedai around, did actually understood, you know, Aes Sedai and what they were, what they wanted to be doing, yeah. as opposed to what the White Cloaks felt they were doing, or what most people felt they were yeah. doing. Like, what an Aes Sedai on a, you know, proper on a pedestal, holier than thou type situation yeah. actually could be and should be. Wasn't in their view.
Yeah.
It was in their own personal view. You know, like, so I feel like they're giving him some of Pedro. I don't think we're going to get a Pedro Nile. I mean, that might just merge his character in.
Yeah.
And maybe, because he's not a, you know, he doesn't play a role as a great captain or anything like that in the story. We have the other four, you know, and then obviously Matt at the end, you know, throwing some book spoilers in there. Sorry, folks. so I feel like that, you know, to merge his viewpoints on the world.
Yeah.
You know, because even he states, like, oh, we would have to fight with the Aes Sedai at some point
mm-hmm.
alongside them.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like that's a good precedent for that.
Yeah.
You know, to fit that in, that person there being like, okay, we want to kill the Aes Sedai, but you've got an injury that regular people can't heal. So yeah. if you live...
The only person that can help you is going
to
be
Aes Sedai. Yeah, like that White Cloak in particular, whoever it was, I didn't catch, to be honest, has a realistic view of the world.
Yes.
Even though he doesn't want these people around, he understands that they're the only one who could help.
Yeah, so, they serve a purpose.
Yeah.
You know, there is benefit, though it may not be a great benefit.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure, you know, White Cloaks, all of them can't be that blind. They'd be like, oh, Aes Sedai are totally pointless and useless and have no value.
Yeah.
And they're just inherently evil.
Chop off their hands, burn them at the stake while we eat tiny birds that have all of the bones in them that
yeah.
cut open our mouths so we're bleeding while yeah. we're eating. Callous, psychotic behavior.
Yeah, yeah, that was, oof.
The bone oh, crunching while he was eating the tiny bird was...
Yeah.
It was not great.
No.
But, you know, like I said, it just was, it's an example of that. It's like, you don't get context. You
no.
just see this happening, and then you see them come across our two rivers group.
Yeah. Well, we didn't get context for the wolves either, but that's foreshadowing for Perrin.
Yeah.
The wolf's turning up. He's got a wound on his leg that he's hiding for some reason. I don't understand.
I don't know. Like, maybe this is part of his thing where he's killed his wife and, you know, he's not going to do anything to actively hurt himself, but he's also not going to do anything to
make himself better.
Yeah.
Like, almost like he's self-inflicting pain, but
yeah.
not. He's just like, okay, I'm going to suffer here because I deserve it.
Yeah.
I mean, that fits with his character.
Mm-hmm.
And then the wolves turn up and, you know, one of them licks his wound. I assume that's meant to be...
Hopper?
Dapple or something. Who is it that leads the pack? I feel like it's Dapple. No, it's not Dapple.
I know exactly one wolf's name, and it's Hopper.
Yeah. there's Burn, who hates everybody, all people. That's easy to be Burn. And then there's Hopper, who wants to fly. There was Dapple. I think, Dapple led the pack. Yeah. Anyway. So one of the wolves comes up, licks his wound, and then there's also like nine wolves there or something.
There's
instead
a
of like
lot.
The three or four that you get of Elias,
yeah.
who I still don't think is going to be in the show.
Yeah.
But and then they just all fuck off.
Yeah.
You know, it was... totally not explained at all.
Yeah.
There was no precedence for it. Nothing happens. He didn't look like he was communicating with them or anything. And then they just fucked off. And it was like, I'm sure anyone watching the show would be like, what the hell was that about?
Yeah.
You know?
Why? What? You know? Why? Why? And why did he allow it? And he just kind of said, I swear.
You would run?
No. When that scene was happening, there's a particular camera angle where just for a second, it looks like his eyes are golden.
Oh,
like,
really?
There was just this glimmer for just a moment.
I'm sure, like, 90% of the room was staring at his... Well, 90% of people who've read the books
so
in that room were staring
the
at
the 15 of us that were in the one room together.
No, because, like, Mahesh...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so... And there are people from the show who've read the books, so,
yeah.
You know.
But I could have sworn... And maybe I just wanted it to be that way, but... I could have sworn that there was, like, just a small glimmer when he was looking out at all
of them.
They didn't,
like, golden up the wolf's eyes or anything. They just had their natural color, so I like that. They didn't make it a cheesy gold or anything.
No, and
so
I like that they were realistic-looking wolves. They weren't, you know, some sort of giant, prehistoric type of
wolf. We weren't getting Taylor Lautner come down on his, like, you know, Twilight shapeshifter type wolf thing, you know?
No, they were not werewolves. They were real wolves. And you know, normal colored ones.
Yeah,
you know, I feel like so
and people
many...
are not going to realize how big they are either because Marcus is what 6'4"?
I don't know if he's quite that big.
No, because Yoshi's like 6'1".
Yeah.
So and Marcus is easily 3 inches taller.
Yeah.
So he's got to be about 6'4". Marcus.
Yeah, we'll give him that.
Yeah, and the wolf is like almost basically waist high on him. You know, he was like, he was up there like
yeah, it comes up
pretty high on his thigh.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, the wolf was like maybe 3 or 4 inches off being waist high. You know, so when you've got that wolf is like
that's a good
yeah
a good
3
size.
Foot off 3 foot high off the ground,
yeah.
Like that's a big like,
a little bit larger than what we have here.
Absolutely, yeah. So yeah, especially the one you've got sitting over there in the basket, bless him. I think he's maybe 6 inches off the floor.
Generous
even though he thinks he's 6 foot off the floor. Bless him.
He's fierce, okay. Yeah. But I liked the wolves, you know, you just kind of throw it in there again, like putting little nuggets in there where it's going to keep people coming back. Like, what's happening here? What is, you know, what does this mean? Who are these people?
Yeah.
What are any of these things? It was really well done.
Yeah. And the music fits so perfectly. I mean, I'd spent the night before listening to the album just walking around London because I love walking around London. it shows how much privilege I have to be able to do that. I'm not scared for myself, but London's an amazing place and the album's incredible. And they were just playing snippets of it constantly. I kept recognizing, oh, that's that theme, oh, that's that theme, oh, that's that theme, whilst trying to absorb, you know, 60 foot of TV. that's an exaggeration, but it was a large screen. And the music just, it fits so well.
Yeah,
you know,
it did. When they're, you know, in the introductory scenes or whatever, when they're in the wine spring and everybody's happy and celebrating after Egwene comes back from her voyage down the river.
Yes.
And everybody's jubilant and happy. The music is great there. When they're dancing on Winter's Night.
Yeah, doing the little circle thing in and out.
And I liked when they were dancing because it felt real.
Yes.
It was obviously choreographed, but it didn't feel professional.
We need to find someone who can figure out that dance. And then like we can have that happen. We should do that as part of the Saturday night party at MalkyrieCon. That's what we should
do. Okay, we'll do a flash mob.
We'll do a flash mob and teach people how to
in Manchester. Piccadilly Square.
Well, maybe not outside. Maybe like actually at the party at the hotel sort of thing. But
That would be a good time.
Yeah.
But I liked when they were dancing because, you know, it didn't feel so stiff.
Yeah,
it felt real. They were just having a good time and dancing.
Exactly.
And the music again, really great. And, you know, it's a celebration of the people that they've lost. And they're like, but hey, let's give them something to come back to and everybody
the
parties.
The explanation of, like, dual lives and that from straight in there.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. The town was just, you know, just dropping that in, like, casual conversation while chatting with Rand. Like, you know, why don't we remember our past lives? You know, we're sometimes with this, sometimes with that, you know, whatever. It's
when does it turn? Like, when do you come back?
Yeah. Just all of that. It felt like a very natural... You know, young man asking his father questions whilst they're doing this yearly ritual, lighting lanterns to guide back the people that have gone and are waiting for the next turning of the wheel.
Yeah.
Again, good exposition explaining how the wheel works in a very natural, easy, not slowing it down way.
Yeah.
Very simple as well.
Yeah.
To the point. Very easy to understand.
Yeah, absolutely.
You don't have to read the books to understand how the wheel works at all now.
No.
I don't think. Like, that was it. Easy.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
Can't wait for the next episode.
I'm so excited.
Yeah, it's going to be brilliant.
Yeah, I want to see the Nynaeve coming out of the water, braid flip, shenanigans.
Killing this yes.
I want her to freaking go for it.
Yes, we need to see that.
I want to see that. I'm excited to see her journey. Mm-hmm. You know, like we've talked about, I'm not a huge fan of hers in the book. I've made that very clear on a number of occasions, but she's fierce. I like that, and I want to see that.
Yeah. She's brought something special there. I mean, I feel like they've all done a pretty good job with their characters, and I'm very interested to see how Donal takes over from Matt in season two, as Matt.
Yeah.
But, you know, I feel like they've all done amazing with the characters, but there's something about Zoe, and I'm sure the others will have moments like this as well later on.
Yeah.
But, like, Zoe's walked in and just been like, it was like she wrote Nynaeve as a character, almost.
Yes.
It was kind of like the vibe I got from it. It was very, very impressive.
Yeah. And her braid, you know.
Yeah.
Her hair in the scenes is beautiful. So I am excited to see where that goes. I am excited to see her journey in getting to the rest of them and, you know, what she's had to go through in order to reach that. I think it'll be great. I'm excited.
So it won't be on the big screen, but, you know, last night was amazing. Free Prosecco.
Yeah.
Seeing celebs, stars.
Yeah.
Madeline Madden literally walked past me to go say hello to Critter.
Yeah.
And I was like, just play a cool role. It's okay. You know, don't stop these people. They're just hanging out. It was, the whole thing was a lot of fun. I didn't think we'd get to go on the carpet.
And we did, which was really cool.
Yeah, it was like our own little piece of the carpet, like it split in half lengthways. We walked down the back and everyone was being interviewed in the front, but I was like,
that's
great.
That's fine,
You know, and we got to sat in the cinema and they were like live sending the footage from outside, live inside.
That was really
cool. So we got to see, not like Matt Hatch or Neighbours or anyone else, but we got to, like, they were just snippets in between, but we got to see, like, the interview of whatever the lady was who was introducing the whole thing. She was a press junket person from somewhere. You know, we got to see her interviewing the actors as they were coming through and such.
Even how they did that was great. The music that they used and, you know, they had the Wheel of Time symbol and everything happening. And, and it just was, it was well done.
Yeah.
It was a small event. There weren't a ton of us there. But it was really fun to see people, the different levels of dress for everyone. You know, there were some people that were, you know, this is a red carpet premiere, kind of wearing gowns and suits.
There was some chick basically looked like she was just wearing fake diamonds. You know, like,
she looked like a disco ball. It was great.
Exactly. I mean, all down for glitter and sparkles, especially you're down for glitter and sparkles, but that was like, you are just a sparkle.
It was a lot.
It was a lot.
And, you know, seeing people in that level of dress eating nachos and drinking champagne was a good time. I wonder if the nachos were free. I feel like we maybe didn't capitalize.
No. People were buying food from the counter.
Didn't waste it.
And I saw the nachos they were eating. I tried those nachos in the cinema, and they're okay if you just want some cheap nachos.
But they're just corn chips and nacho cheese.
But they're not great stuff, you know. And because of the way that the containers are built, you can't actually dig it all out properly as well.
As the
cheese cools down, it just becomes like a sticky block and you can't actually dig it out properly. The cheese is too thick and sticky. Tangent, folks. Kayla loves nachos.
It's an art.
Yeah, nachos are an art. Absolutely.
You know,
to
do them correctly.
that's fair. And you would have been disappointed. I'm glad we didn't do that.
We did drink a number of glasses of champagne.
Yeah, what did we go, like four times, five times?
It was just going to go to waste if we didn't drink it.
I know, right? They were lining that up. I was like, I'll just go back and get some more. And we filmed these little video things.
Oh, that was a lot of fun.
The low game one, we didn't know what we were doing. We just sort of stood there at first like, oh dear, wait, we're meant to do something.
Yes.
But then the channeling one with Moraine.
We put our stuff down so we have both hands. We're like, yes, we are now channelers.
Yeah, and that's a TikTok, folks. I joined TikTok, or it's a YouTube short. Whatever, you can go check it all out. That one was fun. Even with a little slight blur on the side, it's still okay.
We looked badass.
We knew
what we were doing.
It's casting. Maybe that's what they're doing, open casting for random channelers. Maybe you get to be an Aes Sedai and I get to be an astronaut at some point. They were scoping out some people to throw in as extras later on, you know?
Yeah,
I can fly to Prague. We live in Manchester. We can go to Prague. This is fine.
It's not that far. Yeah.
Or a desert. I'll go to a desert, you know.
Yeah, I'll dye my hair red. I'll be ideal. I'm totally fine with that. I'm definitely tall enough.
Yes. Yeah.
So, you know, I have no problem with that.
I'll play one of the short. I'll play that short chief who's pissed off he's even shorter than Wetlanders.
Yes.
Yes.
I love it.
That would be great.
But It was an incredible experience.
It was.
I mean, we looked amazing.
Yeah.
We took this awesome photograph together in the elevator.
Yes. We looked like what was it, Bond film?
Yeah.
That we're up to?
Yes, that's what it looked like. Yeah. We obviously are villains.
Yes.
We're Bond villains.
Yeah. Then we took a great picture in like the waiting area type thing with the blue light that was on the go. Mm-hmm. I put that up on Twitter, folks, if you want to go see it. It's, that's just a great picture of us. And then we looked great.
Yes.
And the lighting just gave it such a great effect. I was like, wow. Yeah. That's a pretty stellar picture there.
Yeah, so. I just felt like our outfits were appropriate. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, the level of dress did not matter. I think we both looked like we could have been characters in the books.
Yeah.
So we looked
suitably dressed for a blue carpet premiere.
Yeah.
You know, we there was enough glamour and glitz to us that it was fine, but also it wasn't so much that, you know, we couldn't have sat down without breaking something. You know, I definitely feel that chick in the dress sat down and had a very uncomfortable ass for the rest of the night because she was sitting on fake diamonds.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I would not have been my first choice, but you know.
Like, Rosamund sat down and clearly was comfortable in her outfit.
Yeah.
But then I feel like Maddie might have sat down and just like, oh, I've got like, you know, and Zoe as well. She had a huge green dress on, which is brilliant, and had pockets. Not very deep pockets.
No.
Unless she was keeping her hand out deliberately, maybe to point out that she had pockets. You know, look, here's my thumb. I've got pockets in
my
dress.
Pocket.
Yeah, which is good because women get gypped on pockets.
We do.
Pockets are amazing inventions, so you should not get gypped on them.
I did not have any pockets.
Sorry? No, you did not have any pockets. Yeah, your trousers didn't come with, exactly, your pants didn't come with pockets. Like, pocketless pants. Whatever that word is. But yeah, I feel like when they sat down, they were just like, oh, there's a lot of dress to handle here and
especially
shit.
Especially with how small the seats were and everything.
Yeah. I mean, they were in the seating further back, so it might have been a slightly more luxurious, but I doubt very,
I can't
very
imagine.
Much.
Yeah.
So.
But overall, A-plus experience.
Oh, yeah.
It was, I had such a great time.
Mm-hmm. I did
and
too.
I think, honestly, I'm going to gush about you for just a second because I'm one of your best friends and I am entitled to do this. The whole experience was phenomenal. Sitting next to you and having even an inkling of how important this has been and your journey and all of this and seeing your reaction to something that you have loved for, you know, 20 plus years come to life on screen. Your reactions were just as entertaining for me and just as, you know, exciting for me to watch. Like, seeing you out of the corner of my eye and seeing your reactions to things was just heartwarming, and I was just so excited for you and so proud of you too for getting invited in the first place. But
I know that blew my mind.
I am still upset that you got the email when you were at work and not while you were here. I would have loved to hear you squeal like a girl.
I scared my coworker.
I would have really enjoyed that, but
yeah.
You know, getting to go was great, and you know, for me personally, it's such a great experience. But like, being there with you and watching you, it was so cute.
Yeah,
you made the cutest faces. You know, people got to see your reaction to the trailer, and I can promise all of you out there, his reaction to the show was even better. It was emotional for him. It was amazing. Yeah. I really enjoyed it.
I teared up at the stupidest things during the show. I was like, I can't cry now. Nothing's happening. Why am I tearing up?
I'm cutting onions. It's fine.
Yeah. No, it was... I mean, it was literally, what was it, earlier this week, no, end of last week, I was like, oh, look, Facebook told me this day a year ago. No, it was the 15th. No, that on Monday, mm-hmm. I got a Facebook notification that a year ago the podcast had reached collectively 1,000 downloads,
mm-hmm.
Or listens, however, you know, it's registered type thing. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. Literally a year later to that day,
mm-hmm.
I am attending the world premiere for The Wheel of Time. Like, that's not anything I could have possibly even imagined.
No.
You know, to be invited was, when I got the, when the Trinity of Chaos reached out, I was like, hey, can we get an email address? I want to ask you something. And they said a little something.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, it'd be like a competition giveaway or something. Like, people are doing that. And then they announced the screenings in America. And I was like, oh, maybe I'm going to get really lucky and get to host a screening like somewhere in the UK. That would be amazing. That, like, okay, that's the height of my expectation. I'm really trying to keep it in check. You know, it's probably not going to be that, but that's the utmost that it could absolutely be. And then, you know, 2 or 3 days go by and I don't hear anything. And then I get this email and it's like, we want to invite you to the world premiere. I genuinely scared my coworker. And then I showed my boss the email later. He had to read it twice to realize what he was reading. And his face just lit up and was just like, right, email right back now and say you're going. Let's check the road or let's make sure you're off work. And I was just like, oh, okay, I wasn't sure. And he was like, dude, you're going if I have to drive you myself. You know, and just to get that reaction from my boss was just like, wow, okay. But yeah, the whole thing was surreal. And it took a lot to take in. But, you know, it was amazing. And just meeting people, like... You know, I went down on a Sunday night and I hung out with Nablus and Critter and Jason Nett from Dragonmount, and then Elliot came down and Richard from Wheel of Theory came down, and then I saw other people that aren't content creators that I just know, you know, in the fandom. Like I met up with Carolina for lunch, and then I saw, you know, Pips and Sarah Kelly Worley and, you know, other people at the premiere as well that were, you know, also invited. You know, it was just great to meet them, you know, hanging out with the innkeeper and meeting, because Taylor wasn't there the night before, so I met Taylor at the premiere and I sort of walked down the carpet and waved, and he was like, Rob, you know, and then he came and saw me afterwards and was just like, dude, how's it going? It's great to actually meet you. And I was like, this is so cool, this is a lot of fun. So just meeting people that I've been talking to for, you know, some of them up to a year or longer, it was also very, very, very cool. I can't wait for JordanCon because it's just going to be one great big nerdy hangout. And
yeah,
I'm totally down for that. So, but yeah, I think we've waffled on long enough now. We're about an hour or 20 or so. This is good. You know.
Yeah.
How's your first podcast experience, Kayla?
It's great.
Yeah.
Because we didn't have an actual topic to discuss. There was no real goal that we were trying to accomplish here. So
I like how we've reviewed this here. You know, we should do all the other episodes like this.
Absolutely.
After episode 3, we'll do, maybe not every week, just make it an episode review, because that, you know, that would be fun, but, you know, probably not, it's not the style of my podcast. So we'll do them as bonuses, but we'll be like, hey, we're doing a bonus episode 3. We'll just sit and just chat about the show. Because this is, a lot of fun.
Absolutely. And if there's some more Lan ass, then I'm totally down.
Is there any other ass you want to see? If it's just Lan ass? Lanyel's ass?
I think just Lanyel.
Yeah, you don't think like Marcus is a good ass or anything?
I mean, like I'm sure the rest of them do. They're just not...
They don't have the same face and body as Daniel.
Well, yeah, it's not even that. I think it's just, you know, I have been a fan of Daniel Honey for so long.
Yeah.
I mean,
your grandmother basically died, didn't she?
Yes.
Like, oh my god, you did what? You were how close to him? You know?
Yes, I can just imagine.
I mean, your grandmother's going to watch the series.
Absolutely.
And all she's watching for is to see his ass.
That's what I was going to say. I can just imagine, you know, come Friday when my family... they're all going to get together and watch this show.
Yeah,
my grandma's going to be like, oh my gosh! You know, because she's 85. She can still get it. Like, if she wants to, she'll appreciate it.
Yeah.
I
love that your family are all getting together just because I dragged you into this crazy fandom world thing.
Yeah. You know. We go all in my family.
Yeah, and kudos again to your dad for the recommendation on the suit to wear. Like,
yeah, I'll let him know.
Really killed it, really slayed it.
I would absolutely be happy to come back on, and we can, you know, I have a very busy schedule and we never see each other.
Oh, In fact, I'm the one's probably away more than you are because of work.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you're like, you have uni a few days a week and you work remotely. You were typically here.
By myself all day, it's fine.
Yeah,
it's totally fine.
Okay. Who's ignoring us right now?
He's tired.
He had a long weekend with his new girlfriend. You know?
Yes.
All right. Well, folks, I hope you've enjoyed us rambling for, you know, this hour or so. And we'll do it again. So, you know, please rate it 5 stars or whatever. You know, clearly it came as the entertaining one out of the two of us here. And come back and check out go see the YouTube shorts of, you know, us. We did we were off to the Wheel of Time premiere thing. So you can check that's a YouTube short or a TikTok or whatever you feel like. Go check out those things. But let me know if you like this. You know, email, tweet, whatever. It's all in the show notes. I'm not doing a big sign off today. I can't bother. You know, we're just chatting shit and having fun.
Well, you don't have to sign off with me because I have none of those things. I am not a content creator, nor do I have a Twitter.
No, you're just an awesome friend. And, you know, I'm genuinely, I had so much fun taking you to the premiere.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I'm so proud of you. I'm so excited. And I'm, you know, can't wait to continue watching the show and seeing what you come up with and everything that you continue to do with your channel and all of your content too.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right, folks. Well, until next week, God knows what we'll do that time, you know. But we'll have seen episode 3 by then. In fact, episode 3 will be out when this drops. That's the amazing thing. So I'm very excited about that. But until next time, folks, may you always find water and ship.
Bye.